What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, co-founder of the Amcha Initiative, responding to on-campus threats to Israel Year Abroad programs with a new plan of action. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our young Shinshiniot, Ron Benicote and Rotem Rappaport. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Cohen and Too Jewish.
Shalom. This is our second-to-last Too Jewish show of the 2018 year. That is, three more shows, including today. And while, as always, we strive to provide you with the very best Jewish radio program in the entire world, outside of Too Jewish, this has been a pretty strange year. It seems essentially impossible to read or watch what's going on in the world without seeing some very odd things happening. While that's probably always true, the last couple of years have seemed to be particularly notable for weirdness, never more so than in 2018. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Strange days indeed. Strange days indeed. A lot of that strangeness originates right here at home in America. Trade wars with China and, my goodness, Canada. Huge numbers of American troops massed on the Mexican border to prevent an invasion by 1,000 unarmed Central Americans. A constant flow of stories about indictments and convictions of former administration officials involved in various criminal activities. Electoral fraud, falsely alleged in many states, but actually happening in North Carolina. A Russian agent infiltrating the NRA. School shootings again and again. An ongoing war over facts and truth in the media, and all of that oddness colored by a flow of provocative and often hostile tweets sent at all hours of day and night. Strange days indeed. And that's only part of it. There's also the tendency in our society now to see every man as potentially taking advantage of every woman. The mere accusation of that, not the proof, has destroyed careers and lives. We always overcorrect for misdeeds of the past, when women were exploited and their very real complaints ignored, but we have now gone the other way, in which every man is suspect in every relationship. Weird. Internationally, we are witnessing dictators and other authoritarian regimes consolidating power in ways we haven't seen in decades, in places as diverse as Russia, Turkey, the Philippines, Hungary, Syria, North Korea, Saudi Arabia, and Myanmar. In Eastern Europe, 19 different countries are considered to be sliding away from democracy now. In Western Europe, politicians trumpet authoritarian responses to the immigration crisis, and they are now taking office or gaining rapidly in elections. Britain is tortuously leaving the European Union, essentially over immigration. Strange days. And attacks on the press have become a typical tool of authoritarians everywhere. They are mostly verbal attacks in America, with occasional violence mixed in. But in many countries, the government has arrested and even killed journalists. Most notably, Saudi Arabia's state-ordered murder and dismembering of Jamal Khashoggi. Ironic in that it took place in Istanbul at the Saudi embassy, and that Turkey protested and exposed it, since Turkish dictator Erdogan has imprisoned more journalists than anybody else in the world the last couple of years. By the way, Khashoggi was no saint, an avid supporter of jihadis and a virulent anti-Israel voice in Washington, but that doesn't justify his execution and butchering. And while human freedom, including freedom of speech, appears to be under attack internationally and perhaps domestically, anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic acts have mushroomed here and abroad. We experienced the worst such attack in American history at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh last month, and every authoritarian movement in the West seems to have an anti-Jewish component to it. We Jews have always been closely identified with liberalizing movements that work to create greater freedom, because for us it was always better to live in free societies that allowed freedom of conscience and freedom of speech. We knew authoritarians might protect us for a while, but that could change whenever it was to their advantage to play the anti-Semitism card. Really free societies protect our rights to pray and live as we wish. The oddity of some of these authoritarian movements, but by no means all, being both pro-Israel and anti-Semitic is a weird new phenomenon unique to today's world. As 2018 winds down, I'm not really sure what to say about how profoundly strange it all seems. Of course, for most of us, our lives continue unaffected by direct involvement in any of this, but it's a weird time in our world. I hope that 2019 changes things for the better. Just as I always have some leftover Hanukkah latkes at the end of the holiday, they freeze wonderfully, by the way, a single layer in a Ziploc bag. You can pull them out and use them till Pesach. Anyway, just as I always have leftover latkes, there also are always a few Hanukkah songs that didn't make it into our Two Jewish playlist in time for the festival. So, although Hanukkah is now in the rearview mirror, here's a truly brilliant version of the story as recorded by the Maccabees, a Hasmonean Hamilton.
How does a Hasmonean, son of a priest and a Hebrew, raised in a village with his four brothers in a Judean province ruled by Pompeius and Antiochus under pressure, grow up to be a hero and commander?
When the king came around, he said this decree's insane, man. We cannot observe our laws while living in our own land. Fight back like your father, don't forget from whence he came. And we'll call you by a brand new name. What's your name, sir?
Call him Judah Maccabee.
As me, you'll be Greek. No need to fight. Our Hellenism serves you right. You won't miss your Shabbat or circumcision for your thoughts. And if you don't comply, I will send my great Seleucid army and you'll tell history goodbye.
La da da da. Sarah. And now we never vowed about it, the statue of Hera. Our teacher Moses passed down a book that is good. It said we prayed to just one God, not an effigy of stone or wood.
2,000 years and while the world's to turn tradition, given his teaching and learning, we keep on reading and yearning. We want to keep the Sabbath in the days that are holy, and can we uphold our temple ceremony?
We pass patiently, waiting with passion, we smash the invasion. We're taking action, no rededication. And though this glory has a special sorrow, today we're gonna fight for tomorrow.
And we are not gonna betray our God. We are not gonna betray our God. Hey yo, we don't need permission to keep our great traditions, and we're not gonna betray our God.
And we are not gonna betray our God.
We are not gonna betray our God.
Although we may not live forever,
although we may not live forever,
we can be glad we won the fight.
We can be glad we won the fight.
When our descendants come together,
when our descendants come together,
they'll tell the story for a night. Celebrate our freedom, something they can never take away, no matter what they tell you.
Let's have a festival of lights.
Celebrate our victory and how we changed history. They'll tell the story of the lie.
They'll tell the story of the lie.
They'll tell the story for 8 nights.
On a more serious note, our guest this morning is Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, co-founder of the important Amcha Initiative, winner of a Kohan Memorial Foundation Award recently. She's now responding to on-campus threats to Israel Year Abroad programs with a national campaign. Find out about this new threat to Jewish college students and what you can do about it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, who is the founder of the Amcha Initiative, co-founder, I should say, which has launched a new anti-academic boycott campaign across American campuses as part of a response to the continued threat of BDS and other forms of anti-Semitic persecution on campus. Good morning and welcome back to Too Jewish.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back on your show.
It's a pleasure always to have you, and I'm sorry to have to invite you back under these circumstances, but that's kind of what you're working on. Tell us a little bit about some recent differences in the efforts. There are new techniques, if you will, that BDS has been employing at Pitzer College, Michigan, other places, in terms of stopping American students from studying in Israel.
Right. So, as you know, there's a BDS campaign, the BDS movement, which boycott stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, which has a number of different initiatives underneath of it. The one that we focus on particularly is the academic boycott, as opposed to, let's say, an economic or a cultural boycott of Israel. It's the academic boycott of Israel, which really calls for the shutting down of the flow of information about Israel, about traveling to Israel, about studying about Israel on college campuses. It really breaks the linkages and calls for breaking and boycotting the linkages between Israeli universities and Israeli academics and American universities or universities in other countries as well. So the reason that we focus on that particularly is because we are an organization that is campus-focused. We fight campus anti-Semitism. And the boycott that really most hurts students and faculty on college campuses is the academic boycott, because it's the bread and butter of a university. That's what a university does, is pursue knowledge and information and truth. And the academic boycott is everything that stands against those values. So we think this is an important issue. It's an important way to approach BDS more generally, is to look at this academic boycott, which really has no place on the university campus, and that's the case that we're trying to make, that it really is not about Israel so much, that it really is about American campuses and the harm that it brings to American students and American faculty by boycotting Israel.
So many American students who study abroad, more maybe now than ever, and particularly Israel, and we'll talk a little bit about the kind of insidious nature of this new version of the campaign and how Amcha is responding to it and what we can do to help and help students on campuses when we come back here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, a new Jewish synagogue, is celebrating its first services, classes, and events this winter. Established by a group of passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is dedicated to create a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. As a new progressive congregation, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the Tucson metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson. We're thrilled to announce Beit Simcha has a new interim home for the next, maybe 6 months at 3001 East Skyline Boulevard, northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell, just across from La Encantada. Services, classes, and events will be held through the winter and spring as we arrange for a more permanent location in the northwest. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend weekly Shabbat services and weekly Adult Education Academy courses, and religious school, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, or go to www.beitsimchatucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginning. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, last week we started talking about the difference between Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews and some of the stereotypes that are used that are really inappropriate. And we introduced the idea of Edot HaMizrach, the Mizrahi Jews, the Jews of the East. That means east of Israel, south of Israel. That includes an incredible array of very interesting communities, some of which still exist in situ, most of which are now in Israel or other parts of the world. Yemenite Jews, Iraqi Jews, Iranian, Persian Jews, the Jews of the Bene Israel, Indian Jews, Jews from Central Asia. These are not Ashkenazic, they're
Ethiopians.
Not Sephardic. Ethiopian Jews, of course.
One of the biggest immigrant groups in Israel now.
Correct. I worked at an immigrant absorption center when I lived there a long time ago and interacted with them. Incredibly interesting and very different Jewish tradition. They're all unique cultures, and they're not Sephardic, and they're not Ashkenazic. Maybe we can amplify that a little bit.
Most of the Jews in North Africa settled there in Roman times, but there were Jews who fled from Spain and Portugal, or who were expelled from Spain and Portugal, who ended up settling in Morocco or Egypt or places like that. So with Jews who geographically come from anywhere between Egypt and Morocco, to include Tunisia, Algeria, Libya, etc., you have to be very careful about how you characterize them,
right,
because
right.
they might be anything.
They might be Sephardic. They could be
Mizrahi Jews. They could even be Jews from Italy who settled in Libya when Libya was briefly an Italian colony.
Right.
So,
right.
And Italian Jews also are neither really Sephardic nor Ashkenazic. That's yet another community. They're definitely not Edot HaMizrach.
No, well, they kind of
they're Italian
that
Jews.
Precede that whole division. They were there since Roman times.
Right. So, but the communities that you mentioned have their origins in several distinct periods. The Jews in Iran and Iraq mainly come from the first diaspora, which occurred as a result of the destruction of the first temple in 586 BCE. The Jews in Ethiopia, legendarily, are the 10 lost tribes or the descendants of
King Solomon and, the Queen
and
of
his
Sheba
affair with the Queen of Sheba.
No one
really knows where they come from, but they're distinctive looking. They don't look like any other Jews. They're certainly not brown. They're African looking, and they have their own customs and their own rituals.
Which were pre-Talmudic, and they didn't include Hanukkah, for example, because they broke off from the main body of the Jewish people before those events.
Right. And you raised also an interesting question about the Central Asian Jews, the communities in Bukhara and Samarkand or whatever. I don't know for a fact, but I believe that they settled there when Jews were active along the Silk Route. And that Silk Route terminated in Shanghai. So one of the earliest chapters of Jewish history in Shanghai had to do with the caravans of trade that relied on Jewish merchants and money changers all along the way. And wherever these caravans stopped, there were caravanserais, places where you could change horses and rest and whatever.
And by and large, there were small Jewish communities in most of those places, sometimes large.
And the reason for those Jewish communities is to keep this trade route open and lubricated and functional. So that goes back to not Roman times, not Greek times,
but Middle Ages,
certainly
basically.
Yeah. The days of Marco Polo, and probably 5 or 6 centuries preceding the modern era, following the Crusades. There are also, and this makes Central Asia also complicated in the way that North Africa is, Jews coming from Russia, European parts of Russia, and from Germany, who settled in those parts of the former Soviet Union. So it's not simple at all.
No, nothing about Jewish history is. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next
week. I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rabbi Kleinman is fresh out of rabbinical school, newly ordained. He's called to officiate at his first funeral for a homeless man with no friends or family. The funeral is held at a cemetery across town. Rabbi Kleinman, being new to the area, arrives late, but he notices a few workers gathered around an opening in the ground. Young and enthusiastic, Rabbi Kleinman pours out his heart and soul as he gives his eulogy and recites the memorial prayers. He's so powerful, he brings the workers to tears. When the service is over, the rabbi walks back to his car, opens the door, and starts to get in. He overhears a worker say, "That was amazing. I never saw anything like that before. And I've been putting in septic systems for 20 years. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Shin Shiniot, Ron Benekot and Rotem Rappaport, representing the Weintraub Israel Center and Israel. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So you just came back from a conference back east of all the Shin Shinim throughout, I guess, North America?
Right. We just came back. It was in Pennsylvania in a camp. So we were all the Shin Shinim in the U.S. and Canada, which is about 100 people.
About 100, okay.
Yeah, and all the staff.
So really not that many, actually.
No, but we have some more in Europe and, you know, other places around the world.
Australia.
No, we don't
not
have
Australia
it.
Not Australia yet, okay.
I wish, though. And it was really fun because we got to see all of our friends and share some experiences, and they got to share their experiences with us. And we got some really good ideas that we can bring to this community. And I think it's just going to improve whatever we're doing here and going to make it be way bigger and better.
So besides the fact that the snow was like 4.5 feet high back there, which is not something you had experienced before, what were the most important takeaways that you got?
I think that we got a lot of stuff from the most part from all the Shin Shinim that were there, because they experienced the same things that we do, and we don't see it here a lot because there's only 2 of us, but there's 100 throughout the U.S. and Canada. So we got to understand each other and share experiences and share thoughts and listen to other people and get that they're having the same difficulties and the same pluses and minuses. So it was a great motivationer for us. And just, you know, we had a really good sessions as well with the staff, and they gave us a lot of information that would be very useful for the rest of the year.
Even though your biggest problem isn't that you don't have enough people around you or enough to do here, it still must feel good to be in that community. Did it feel a little bit like being back in Israel, only colder?
Exactly. It was, you know, just to talk Hebrew for a couple of days and to see all of the people that we already know. But I will say that it got us to miss Tucson, and I'm really happy that we got back to the warm weather and warm people, and I'm just happy to be here again.
What was there anything that you brought to it that other people didn't have? Any of you talked about the shared experiences. Were any of your experiences unique here?
I think we're one of the one of the only places that it's hot. And we and Los Angeles were the only one who were freaking out about the snow, and everyone was like, it's normal. And we're like, no, we don't have it in Tucson, in Los Angeles. Let us be happy about it for a second, please. And everyone, oh, we're used to it. Like, good for you, but better for us.
Our children have the same experience when they go there, even though they aren't from Israel. So. Well, I hope you stay warm, and in especially through our brutally cold Tucson winters now.
Thank you.
We'll talk next week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, thank you.
And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and of his great father, Jacob, also known as Israel, with the final Torah portion of the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with a description of the death of Jacob, perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows his dad is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to him for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his father, Jacob assures him this blessing order is intentional. Both boys will be the fathers of great tribes, but the younger will exceed the elder in accomplishment. You know, we still use this blessing each Friday night when we bless our own sons today, in temple and at home. Yisimcha Elohim ke Ephraim v'chimenashe. In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger, to receive a certain bonus for being firstborn, but repeatedly throughout Genesis, the younger child ends up excelling the older, receiving a greater portion of the inheritance. It's as if there's a clear message. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of human society. As Paul Simon once sang, God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man. For us, this consistent reversal of the traditional roles teaches a different lesson. In the negative formulation, Shakespeare had Caesar say, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves." That is, we can't attribute our own failures to birth order, or our horoscope, or even our parents. Life happens. But it's how we respond to it that's up to us, not our birth order. What we can do is control our own actions and our own choices. We each have the ability to shape our destiny. Like Ephraim, or like Joseph himself, or his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness, and to God, if we work and care and continue to seek holiness. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, co-founder and director of the Amicha Initiative that addresses anti-Semitism on college campus, will introduce their new program to combat the BDS movement's efforts. They're trying to censor freedom of thought to stop students from going on Israel Year Abroad programs. Find out all about it and what you can do to help stop it when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There's been a wave of Palestinian violence in recent days in the West Bank. Last week, two Israelis were killed and two others seriously injured in a shooting near a bus stop in the West Bank, the second such incident of a week. The attack occurred Thursday at a bus stop outside Givat Asaf settlement, a mile from the settlement of Ofra, where, in an attack last Sunday night, seven people were injured, including a pregnant woman whose prematurely delivered baby then died. In the second attack, a gunman stopped his car next to the bus stop, got out, and started shooting. He fled the scene on foot. Four people, all in their 20s, were shot. The two dead were young Israeli soldiers. One of the injured is a soldier in critical condition with a gunshot wound in the head. The soldiers were guarding the bus stop when the attack occurred. The injured woman is a civilian. The terrorist attack came hours after Israeli troops shot a man in Ramallah suspected of involvement in last Sunday's attack. The terrorist attacker later died. Hamas spokesman Abdul Latif al-Kanu said, "Hamas praises numerous resistance attacks as well as the citizens of the occupied West Bank and the revolutionary youth. The attack was in response to the crimes of Zionist occupation in the occupied West Bank. Our members will stand against the occupation and will resist it until it ends." Fatah, the party of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, blamed the Palestinian terrorist attack on Israel, referring to the deaths of three Palestinian terrorists who committed two separate West Bank murders and were killed while being apprehended by Israeli soldiers. When the occupation army harms and destroys Palestinian land and Israeli soldiers execute three Palestinians in a kangaroo court, they have to understand the Palestinian response will be in proportion to the aggression, said Fatah spokesperson Munir Jagoub. The Palestinian terrorist attacks near Efrat were not the only ones last week. Thursday afternoon, a soldier was injured in a car ramming attack outside of Ramallah at a bus stop near the West Bank settlement of Psagot. The driver was shot and killed. And early Thursday morning, two Israeli border police officers were injured in a stabbing attack in the Old City of Jerusalem near the Damascus Gate. The terrorist, identified as a 26-year-old resident of Kalandia refugee camp near Jerusalem, is visible on surveillance video trying to stab a civilian, then stabbing a 21-year-old Israeli policeman near the eye and a 19-year-old Israeli policewoman in the leg before being shot and killed by other officers. And finally, the Palestinian man who murdered two Jewish Israeli co-workers at a factory in the Barkan industrial zone in the West Bank was killed in a shootout with Israeli forces who came to arrest him. Ashrat Nalwa, 23 years old, was killed early Thursday morning after Israeli forces surrounded his hideout. He fired at the security forces and was killed in an exchange of shots. The Shin Bet security services have learned that Nalwa was planning to carry out another terror attack, which was thwarted with his arrest and, of course, death. In the attack back on October 7th, he shot and killed Kim Levengrod Yechezkel, 29 years old, a mother from Rosh Ha'ayin, and Svi Hajbi, a 35-year-old father of three from Rishon LeZion. Both were tied up and shot at close range, execution style. Nalwa lived in the village of Shweka near the West Bank city of Tulkarm, had a permit to enter the Barkan settlement for work. Nobody knows how he was able to bring the weapon into the industrial zone. This was the first terror attack in the Barkan Industrial Park. It is a home to 160 factories that employ thousands of Israelis and Palestinians. You know, it's beginning to have the look of another of the waves of Palestinian terrorist attacks, like the stabbing and car rammings that struck Israel a couple of years ago. We hope that sanity returns to the Palestinians, or at least to their leadership, soon.
Everybody doesn't like something, but nobody doesn't like Sara Lee. Everybody doesn't like something, but nobody doesn't like Sara Lee.
Nobody doesn't like Sara Lee, but going forward, it won't officially be kosher. In Kashrut News, the largest baking company in the U.S. will be removing kosher certification from most of its bread and rolls. The preposterously named Bimbo Bakeries USA, pronounced Bimbo, but still. Anyway, Bimbo Bakeries USA confirmed it will be removing kosher certification from most of its bread. The company produces brands including Arnold's, Sara Lee, Stroman, Fryhoffers, and others. Two of its major brands, Entenmann's and Thomas Brothers, will remain certified kosher. So, donuts and English muffins are still safe. A couple of rye breads will also retain their certifications. Removing the kosher certification from some of our products was strictly a business process decision to enable more efficient operations. It was one we did not make lightly, Bimbo said in a statement. Thomas and Entenmann's products, as well as Arnold's and Levy's rye breads, will remain kosher certified. It's important to note, we have heard our customers concerned. We're working with kosher certification organizations and discussing alternative solutions. The company did not say when the decision will take effect. The decision will make it much harder for those outside major Jewish population centers to buy kosher bread, say executives at the Orthodox Union and Kofke, the kosher agencies that certify the vast majority of Bimbo's kosher products in the U.S. Rabbi Ari Senter, Kofke's kosher administrator, said the agency has received hundreds of calls since the decision was first reported earlier this month. Rabbi Menachem Ganak, a past guest of Too Jewish, said, "We've been hearing from a lot of consumers. They're concerned about this." Ganak is the rabbinic administrator of the OU's kosher division, largest in the country. "If you live throughout the U.S., it's not always so easy to get kosher bread. In terms of kosher bread, Bimbo plays a critical role." Ganak explained the decision stems from a mix of corporate efficiency and kosher laws. Bimbo wants the flexibility to produce breads on the same factory lines as breads that contain dairy products, because traditional Jewish law says meat and dairy products cannot be consumed at the same meal. Bread for the kosher market must be strictly non-dairy unless they appear and are marketed as obviously dairy, like cheese bread or something. Both Kashrut agencies are in ongoing conversation with Bimbo, hoping to salvage more kosher brands and clarify when the change will take effect. Until then, most breads remain kosher certified. Bimbo Bakeries USA is the U.S. division of Grupo Bimbo, the Mexican company that's the largest of world's bakeries. The company capped a move into the U.S. market in 2011 when it acquired Sara Lee. There are 1.3 million year-round Jewish consumers of kosher foods in the U.S., 35 million non-Jewish consumers of kosher products. More than 40% of new foods launched in recent years have claimed to be kosher. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Tammy Rossman Benjamin. She is the co-founder of the Amicha Initiative, which has been responding successfully and unfortunately with great necessity to anti-Israel and really anti-Semitic activity on campuses all across the country. She was a winner of the Kohan Foundation Award a couple of years ago. We started to speak a little bit about the BDS effort to stop students from studying in Israel. Is there any precedent for anything like this?
There really isn't. This outside of an academic boycott of Israel, which actually calls on its supporters or its endorsers to actually do things like try to shut down Israel abroad programs that exist, from their campus to Israel. Let's say from the University of California, where I'm at, Santa Cruz to Israel, to try to shut down those programs, or for faculty members to refuse to write letters of recommendation for students who want to study in Israel. And we've seen both of those things quite recently. A couple of months ago, there were two faculty members at the University of Michigan who refused to write letters of recommendation for their students who wanted to study at Tel Aviv University. And that was after agreeing to write letters of recommendation for those students. But once they found out that the students wanted to travel to Israel, they refused. In the name of the academic boycott, they were very clear that this was they were politically motivated to be in support of this specific boycott of Israel, Israeli universities. And then last month or a couple of weeks ago at Pitzer College, the faculty senate, the faculty body at Pitzer College, which is a small liberal arts school in Southern California, voted overwhelmingly to shut down the study abroad program with Israel, which happens to be with the University of Haifa.
Hmm.
So those two things, those two acts, are really unprecedented. Certainly the Pitzer Act, absolutely, we've never seen that before. There's never been a politically, to my knowledge, nobody's brought any other examples to my attention. And both my colleague and I, who founded Amcha, were both academics, and we've been in the University of California system together for about 50 years in terms of our combined experience there. We've never seen anything like this. Nothing. We've seen attempts to do this. About a number of years ago, there was a petition that was signed by over 100 faculty members of the University of California to shut down the Israel Abroad program in compliance with the academic boycott, and there was a similar faculty petition that was signed by a number of faculty at the California State University system to shut down their education abroad program in Israel, but they failed. They didn't succeed. The administration just ignored them. But this was the faculty themselves that actually have a say in this. Now, it's not a done deal yet, but this was the first step towards that. This is huge. This is groundbreaking for them and terrible for us. And it really has helped us sort of to motivate, propel our efforts forward to try to actually reveal and expose exactly what this academic boycott is. Because we believe that once universities understand the moral bankruptcy of this, that it's not just about, it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, you think that you're standing with the angels and supporting this moral cause in the Palestinians, but what you're doing is hurting your own students. You're hurting your faculty colleagues, because part of the academic boycott guidelines calls for trying to scuttle your colleagues' collaborations with Israeli universities and Israeli scholars. So you're hurting yourselves. You're hurting your own university.
It should be noted that academic boycotts of Israel were, for quite a while, very common, particularly in England, but in Europe in general, in which you weren't allowed to collaborate with Israeli colleagues who had nothing to do with the West Bank or occupation or anything else. It just meant that intellectually and academic, there was sort of a restriction on academic freedom, which is the whole point of higher education, I always thought.
Right. I mean, the only time we've seen anything close to this, and I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, was in Nazi Germany,
right,
when they kicked out 4,000 Jewish academics from German universities.
Now, this anti-Israel bias has crept into, jumped into anti-Semitism in a variety of cases. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, what one of the things that we've looked at, not so much at the faculty level, but certainly at the student level, and certainly what happens in the classroom, what happens in the academic senate, absolutely influences the students and how they behave and how, you know, what they say, but also how they act, more importantly, how they act. And what we found with several studies that we've done, in fact, every study that we've done in the last few years, looking at anti-Semitic activity on hundreds of campuses across the country, is that there is a very, very strong correlation between anti-Zionist and anti-Israel rhetoric and, let's say, BDS promotion on campuses, in the campus square, let's say, by Students for Justice in Palestine, which is free speech by and large, and anti-Jewish hostility, so acts of aggression against Jewish and pro-Israel students, including assault, including destruction of property, vandalism, suppression of speech, harassment, and other ways of really harming Jewish and pro-Israel students. But that this, it doesn't come in a vet. It's not in a vet. And we also have other kinds of anti-Semitism which come from a different quarter, but sometimes also focus on Israel. Even the far-right anti-Semitism, the neo-Nazi and white supremacist propaganda that filters onto college campuses, some of it focuses on Israel as well. So Jewish students and pro-Israel students in particular feel squeezed from both sides in terms,
sure,
of the rhetoric, in terms of the behavior. Sometimes, thank God, we haven't seen the kinds of white supremacist aggression and violence like we've seen outside of the university, like, let's say, at Pittsburgh, the horrible tragedy at Pittsburgh. We haven't seen,
right,
that kind of sort of right-wing inspire I hate the term alt-right, but let's say white supremacist violence on college campuses. Mostly the behavior that affects Jewish students on college campuses comes from sort of the anti-Zionist motivated ideology, which morphs from rhetoric and free speech into acts that are no longer expressions of free speech, but actually really are harmful to Jewish and pro-Israel students' actions.
When we see this kind of new technique, and it does seem like the BDS movement, which has, frankly, although it's dangerous, by and large, it certainly has failed to damage Israel economically, but it has, its greatest impact seems to have been really on the campuses and on the students at those campuses. We see these kinds of new techniques, and they do always seem to be trying something new. What's the impact on the students and on the faculty of the campuses that are affected? And by the way, these are not, you know, insignificant academic centers. I mean, Pitzer is one of the Claremont colleges, very fine university, University of Michigan, University of California system, maybe the best public educational system in the United States.
Well, we're seeing this at Columbia. We're seeing this at, at really Ivy League colleges as well. Right. This is not, in fact, the colleges that have more Jewish students and the sort of the higher ranking colleges in general, this is where we find this. This is where we find this stuff. Not so much in you know, far flung schools that don't have many Jewish students. It's hard to say, but my guess is it just doesn't exist. Not just that there's nobody there to report it.
Right.
I just think that there's not the same kind of anti-Israel animus in those places as there is in the major universities and colleges, where particularly the ones that Jews frequent. And yes, well, I think what's happening is that there is a movement towards sort of being really upfront about what their motivation is, right? It's no longer, nobody now on campus really talks about Israeli policy. They have no problem saying, we are anti-Zionist. We want an end to the Jewish state. We want to dismantle the Jewish state. For instance, there was a national conference of the Students for Justice in Palestine, and it took place at UCLA, and there was a big brouhaha about that, especially in the Jewish community, calls for the chancellor at UCLA to cancel the conference. That's not the point that I'm trying to make, but it happened a couple of weeks ago, and their literature about the conference, about the themes and goals of the conference, were explicit to the nth degree. Their goal is to dismantle the Jewish state, and they say so up front. It's not anymore, we're just trying to criticize Israeli policy. Oh, that, you know, you call us anti-Semitic for criticizing Israel. Well, that's not what they're doing. They're clearly trying to, you know, to destroy Israel, and that's what the BDS movement is used in the service of as well. That's the point of it. Every one of the founders and major leaders in the BDS movement has said as such, that their goal is not to just get Israel to behave better. Their goal is to get Israel to not exist anymore.
Right. So what can we do? I mean, you're right. Obviously, the BDS goal is not simply to get Israel to withdraw from the West Bank or to establish a Palestinian state. It's to establish a Palestinian state in place of Israel.
Correct.
What can we do, hearing all of this, getting upset by all of this, but wanting to take action? And in particular, those of us, some of us have kids on college campuses now, have friends who are faculty on campus, who have grandchildren on college campuses. What can we do to help influence this situation?
Great question. I mean, I think that we need to be as clear-eyed and as strategic as we possibly can. This is a huge issue, and therefore we have to focus on sort of what I think of as the Achilles heel. The Achilles heel of this movement is the academic boycott, because it is so fundamentally at odds with everything the university stands for. Right, it happens at universities, but it's so fundamentally at odds with everything that university stands for. And that case can be made. If we can make that case successfully at universities, if we can get, as we've asked in a letter that we just put out yesterday to 250 university presidents across the country, asking them to sign a statement that says that the academic boycott and the implementation of an academic boycott on their campuses is morally unacceptable. It is, they condemn it in the strongest possible terms. If we can get university presidents across the country to say that this is a morally unacceptable, reprehensible movement, which we will not allow to hurt students and faculty on our campuses, I think that that's the first step in actually unraveling BDS. because if we can show how morally reprehensible it is in this case, I think by extension, the BDS movement becomes untouchable. The BDS movement becomes as morally reprehensible in the eyes of the world as we in the Jewish community already know that it is. And I think that's what we can do. We've asked presidents across the country to make this pledge, to sign such a statement, and we're asking folks all over the country to reach out to those presidents of those colleges and universities where they went, their alma mater, where their kids go or went, where they donate, where, you know, that's in their backyard, some school or schools that they have a relationship with, and to ask their urge the leaders of those schools to adopt this statement and to be a moral leader and to make a moral statement about the academic boycott movement. And I think BDS by extension, although that's not exactly what we're asking them to do. So I would ask your listeners to actually do that, to go to, if they go to our website, they'll actually find a list of 250 universities that have already spoken out, whose leaders have already about 5 years ago made a statement about the academic boycott condemning it. Now we're asking them to do more, to say its implementation on our campuses is unacceptable. If they can go to our website, find the universities that are important to them, or go online, find those universities and write to them and say, make the statement, sign the statement. This is really important. They can also sign a petition that we have online. Again, they can do it by going to our website, amchainitiative.org.
Right, that's www.amchainitiative.org.
And we have on our homepage a petition that they could sign that again is going to get sent to university presidents across the country. I mean, thousands of them, asking them to sign this statement, because I think we want wall-to-wall university leaders who say this is unacceptable. And I think that's the first step. I actually really do think that we can defeat the academic boycott.
From your mouth to God's ears, as we say, I want to thank Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, and actually from your actions to God's ears.
Thank you.
A great visit here. Amcha Initiative is doing tremendous work combating a huge danger on college campuses, not only for Jews, but really for academic freedom in general. Thank you so much, Tammy.
Thank you, and Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Take care. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Avi Haddad, principal of the Harel School in Kiryat Malachi, Israel, discussing what it's like to run a school under the constant threat and reality of Hamas missiles from Gaza. We'll explore Israeli and American educational systems with him as well. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website, Top 10 in America. Our playout this morning is Aaron Ben Susan's Lecha Dodi, the song of welcome for the Shabbat bride on Friday night, sung by his brother Jacques Ben Susan. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Lecha Dodi, Likat Kala, Bene Shabbat. Nekabela
קלה בנשבה נקבלה
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.